The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and to learn how you can support this and other fine Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Please hang up and try again.
Grab a slice of the Epic Pie Cast. Don't stick it in your mouth. Put it in your ear holes now.
Ladies and gentlemen, Nelson Lugo, Schaefer the Dark Lord, and Rachel Shank.
That's me.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming to you from the beautiful and spacious Studio 6C in Astoria, Queens, this is the Epic Podcast, episode 35. I am your host, Nelson Lugo.
I am your other host, Schaefer the Dark Lord.
And I am your other host, Rachel Shank.
Hey, the gang's all here. And also, a special episode addendum.
Yes.
This is our third anniversary of the podcast.
Yeah.
That's preposterous. We've been doing this for three
years?
Yes, we have.
3 years.
Well, some of us have been doing this for 3 years.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're still in the intern program.
Yeah, it's
you'll catch up.
Guys,
you'll
the amount up. Of coffee I have to bring to these mothers, it's...
It's like you're saying that jokingly, and it's almost kind of... It's not true. You're not required to bring us coffee, but...
But if you change the word coffee to beer...
You're not required,
then,
but you did bring cold ones tonight.
Yeah, I do often take a moment where I'm like, it's been a couple months since I brought beers to the podcast. I'm going to do it this month.
Aww.
And thank you for bringing them today because it is a million degrees
in
the studio.
It's balls hot.
This episode is brought to you by cold beer.
Here, I'll clinky, 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 clinky.
Yes, oh yes, clinky, clinky.
That's so much better.
Delicious beer.
Like little angels.
So what is up, guys? I wasn't here last month.
No. Something happened, but you were gone. And
I feel much better now.
So glad you're back.
Your abs look stunning, by the way.
What?
Nothing.
Oh. Fair enough. So what's the haps? What's going on? Give me the details. Tell me all of the wonderful things you've been doing this month.
You know what, Lucatron? I think maybe you should catch us up on what you were doing in the previous month since you weren't with us.
Well, the reason why I wasn't here is because I was teching for a show. I did a 30-minute excerpt of my the show that I'm currently writing. And I did it for the Tank Theater, and I did two performances of it, and I hate it. I hate everything about it. I think I'm awful, and I'm just going to basically crawl into a fetal position and wait to die.
Yay!
Information about upcoming performances of Nelson's new show will be in the doobly-doo.
So when you say you are when you say you are working on a new show, then I assume this is another Nelson Lugo joint, which means a combination of magic and storytelling.
Correct. I mean, I think I may have mentioned this before on the podcast, but I'm writing a show that's a far more vulnerable, far more emotionally raw, and it talks about subjects of, you know, very... very large topics of like life and death and what that means to me and pairing that up with magic tricks. And I think I've mentioned that before on the podcast.
So this would be your sophomore effort.
Yes.
One that is
fabled
as being notoriously difficult and dissatisfying to the creator.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've always kind of hated everything I do, but this is as a proof of concept, it works, right? Because as a microcosm of a larger show, all of the elements work because there's a multimedia aspect to it. There's video and there's projection. And it's technically a little more sophisticated. So as a proof of concept, it works. As a piece of entertainment, as a piece of experiential theater, I am horrible, and I should probably just stop.
Wow. Well, that's it's good to see that you are continuing to be a tortured artist. That in your month off teching a new show, you did not cease being a tortured, self-loathing artist.
Right.
I feel like we should start a book club or something.
Yes, except that book club is code for drink whiskey and cry.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, wait, we already do that.
Yes.
Well, Schaefer, would you like to join us in the whiskey and the crying that we call book club?
What we call book club.
Yes. I've hated everything that I've created, so I think I'm qualified to be there.
Awesome.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Our next book is called Jameson's, and we'll be doing a book club next week.
Yeah, the publication's really great because it's a foreword by On the Rocks. So,
do you serve anything else at these meetings? Because I don't drink whiskey.
That's because you hate fun.
No, it's not. It's because I liked fun too much once upon a time, and now I can't do a lot of things.
So you don't drink whiskey on purpose?
No, I don't. Because to me, whiskey was Garfunkel without Simon, and Simon was cocaine. So I would listen to Garfunkel's solo record and be like, this actually is kind of lame. If only his buddy were here with him, that would be fun. Hey, I still have his number. Let's call him up.
Fair enough.
So that's why I don't drink whiskey.
That's acceptable.
That's acceptable. Yeah. I guess you could bring your own book. I.e. beer.
Okay.
I guess, you know.
I'll bring that, and I'll bring a record that I hate that I'm working on. So, and then awesome. I can join in all of the I hate my art thing.
Oh,
that's part, if that's part of these meetings.
Yes, absolutely.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah,
art
yeah.
Art is the thing that makes us the saddest.
Is that what it is?
Right.
Have you put the pin on exactly what it is?
I've done a lot of research, and I've been around a lot of different people of different age ranges, and I have found those who create art are made sad by their art.
I went to a show the other day, and a colleague of mine looked at me and went, you always look like you're the saddest person in the room. and I looked back at her and I said, no, that's just only because I have resting sad face.
I think you were a kid and you were probably making a lot of pouty faces. And
it just stuck.
Oh, somebody came up behind you and slapped you on the back real hard and you just
the
stayed that way.
Froze there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, basically, that's what I was doing. That's why I wasn't here. What else? I mean, basically, just a whole lot of just, you know, creating a lot of content, creating, you know, trying to do some writing. I'm massively blocked right now, so I'm basically writing like a sentence a day and trying to work on magic that's appropriate for the show. And basically, I've been doing a lot of magic videos. So I've been trying to fill my YouTube channel with content.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely working. You're creating a lot of stuff.
Absolutely. I'm creating everything that has nothing to do with the show.
Nice. I noticed you posted something on Facebook the other day of a grandma's apothecary kit. What exactly was that about?
Obviously, you didn't take the time to watch it, Rachel.
It was just a picture.
Oh, well, I have a video on... I have two videos. One is a story that I've never told on stage before about my grandmother and the time she gave me a bath when I was 19 years old.
Okay.
And then the second video is a sort of time-lapse, high-speed inventory of her apothecary kit. And because one of the things that I have... Because my grandmother passed away, and one of the things that I have of hers that's a memento is her apothecary kit, because she was a Puerto Rican witch, and she did spells and removed curses, and I'm gonna go on record and say that I fully believe all of that was malarkey, but she believed it, and so she's my grandmother, so I love her, so there's a conflict there.
Also, I think it's important to note that you came into possession of this apothecary kit because you stole it from your father.
Well, hold on now. Hold on.
You say it in the video.
No, I know, but you're putting that out of context. The apothecary kit, when my grandmother died, my father and my aunt divvied up a lot of her belongings so that they could have mementos of their mother. And my dad has a lot of her stuff sort of displayed in his house in Orlando, but her apothecary kit was underneath a desk collecting dust. It wasn't displayed. It wasn't out anywhere. It was just being neglected. And I think he kind of forgot it was there because there was a lot of dust on it. So when I went to visit him, I basically rescued this kit and brought it back home.
Cool euphemism, bro. You stole it from your dad.
Well, he's my dad. I don't actually... You can't really steal anything from your parents because it's all...
Yes, you can.
Oh, my God. Back me up here.
Listen. What you call rescuing...
Yeah.
Can be construed as theft.
Sure.
But I'm saying you can't say there's no such thing as stealing from your parents because you can absolutely steal from your parents.
You can.
I am disagreeing with you on the blanket statement.
And I agree. And I am taking back my blanket statement.
Thank you.
Yes, you can. However, you can. I do not count this as theft because grandma.
Huh.
But if you want to know more about it, go to my YouTube channel. Check out all of the videos. Subscribe to my YouTube channel. Leave comments because I love comments. And if you want to see more, then email us at theepicpodcast@gmail.com.
That is not our email address.
It is at epicpodcast@gmail.com.
Drink.
Thank you.
That's what I said it was. What did I say?
You said the Epic Podcast.
You did it like you were an old man. I got on the Facebook.
Oh, I see.
You put a thing in front of it.
Fair enough. That's what you did.
Well, you know what? We'll go ahead and save you the work, and we'll just put Nelson's YouTube page in the doobly doo.
Oh, there you go. Now you don't have to remember anything. Yeah. So,
but please do remember.
Continued to add to your 21st century convenience.
Yeah, so that's what I've been doing. Just basically doing a lot of work that has nothing to do with the show, that has looming deadlines.
Hooray!
No, it sounds like it does have to do with the show because you're... all right, I'm not going to... I realize that you were being self-loathing rhetoric.
The work that I'm doing is not specific to the show that I'm creating.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. So there's that. Great. What you been up to?
Who cares? Rachel, what have you been up to?
Oh, well.
The internet cares, Schaefer. The internet cares.
Honestly, I spent so much of last month trying to find means of employment that my time was eaten up in that. But I did take time to watch Mad Men.
Oh. All right.
I guess that's the
How much have you watched?
I am almost done with the episode Waterloo.
I don't know what that is.
It's the mid-season finale of the 7th season. So I'm pretty much like in the home stretch.
Okay.
Yeah, this means she has about 6 episodes left that are not yet available on Netflix.
Oh, I see. I see.
And
I
feel that I'm far enough into it now to say meh. I feel like we had this conversation last month with Breaking Bad where I was like, I don't think I can get behind shows with an anti-hero. I think I'm not a big anti-hero human.
Interesting.
I just don't get it.
The rest of America loves that show.
The rest of America loves Breaking Bad. I feel like I need a corner called Unpopular Opinion Corner with Rachel.
Well, I saw the first season, and I didn't like it, and I stopped watching.
I can't stop watching.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
It's like it's so bad. It's like a train wreck.
No, it's just like I kind of just want to understand humanity. And I feel like my best way to connect with humans is by watching the shows that they love.
But also, is there a part of it in the specific case of Mad Men where you're watching and you want to see that there's going to be some sort of comeuppance for these horrible people, or at least some sort of retribution for the people who have been shit on for 6 seasons?
Yeah, honestly, I feel like I root for the characters who are underappreciated, mistreated.
So basically, all of the women.
And honestly, I know he had a very like small part in the beginning before the big like change, but Hollis the elevator operator, I wanted to give him an Emmy so badly. I loved Hollis, but I don't see where any irony is in this. It feels more celebratory of this time, more nostalgic than I would prefer. Sure. In a show that creates,
you know, yeah,
such
no,
a,
it absolutely celebrates that culture.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I think I honestly
it's unapologetically
think
so.
That bothers me.
Yeah, that bothered me as well.
Yeah, but
absolutely. Which is why I couldn't get past the first season. I don't care about any of the damn characters, and my only requirement for some sort of media that I am consuming is that I have to have a hook. I have to have one person that I care about and care about their journey.
Oh, mm-hmm. It's pretty easy to care about Peggy Olson.
Yeah.
She's the character that introduces us into the world because, you know, in the first episode, in the pilot, she is a new hire as a secretary at this firm. She doesn't know this world. She has no idea what's going on. And she is kind of our chaperone throughout the story.
No,
and then we watch her we watch her soul turn black, and we watch her like raise the like climb the ranks and get a better position, and yeah. also have to face.
Does it get better in the second season? Because first season she's just milquetoast. I mean, she's basically a doormat the entire time.
Well, yeah, it does get better for her, but it just as things get better for Peggy Olson, new things get terrible for her.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
I mean, Peggy Olson is a very tortured character. Yeah. She's my favorite character on the show.
I love Peggy.
She would have to be.
Yeah. Yes.
She's designed that way, I would imagine.
She is the one to root for. And you know, and Joan, too. Joan Harris/Holloway.
I don't care about Mad Men. I don't care about Breaking Bad. I couldn't get into those shows at all, you know. In much the same way that I could get behind, like, Sopranos. I don't like shows where I'm supposed to root for the bad guy, you know. I never really understood that.
I don't feel like in The Sopranos you're always supposed to root for the bad guy. I think, like, people took it the wrong way. Like, the assholes who, like, idolize Scarface and hang pictures of Al Pacino on their walls, they missed the point. I think in The Sopranos you were supposed to celebrate in the setbacks that the heroes face.
Well, it's the same thing with, like, Sons of Anarchy. Same thing. I'm supposed to root for the bad guys, and everybody's a fucking bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, I get how it could be popular to some people. It's not something that I particularly am drawn to.
Yeah, but I love the hell out of Macbeth.
Oh, Macbeth is definitely a bad guy.
Totally a bad
guy. Well, yeah, but he gets, like...
He gets it in
the end.
Spoiler you know what alert, I mean? Ooh. Macbeth gets it in the end.
Like, I mean, the Macbeth is a story about a bad guy who rises and falls hard. Mm-hmm. You know, there's redemption for the other characters because of his fall.
Yeah. That's...
Like, you're not supposed to root for Macbeth. You're supposed to, like, celebrate that he gets taken down.
I don't think you're supposed to root for Tony Soprano or Don Draper either.
No.
I suppose you can make that argument, but the rest of America,
I just never did. I really enjoyed Mad Men, and I don't know why, because it really made me angry week after week. But there was never a moment in seven seasons of that show where I was ever like, yeah, Don Draper, way to go. Like, never. I only enjoyed the moments where he was getting his ass handed to him.
Yeah, well, I suppose that's also the point of the show. Like, you really love it when, like, the handsome leading man, like, you know, gets something horrible happen to him.
Well, it's not the fact that he's the handsome leading man. It's that he's the mildly sociopathic guy who gets his way all the time because he happens to be good at his job.
Yeah.
And good looking and white and all of the trappings,
like,
of that era.
And, like, super privileged.
Yeah.
He's just a terrible, terrible self-serving shit.
Awful. Just awful. I will say, if you wish to binge watch Mad Men and you honestly don't have anything better to do, like any other way you could serve humanity, like maybe you could volunteer at a soup kitchen. I don't know. I guess you could watch Mad Men. I guess you could do that.
Well, since you're not enjoying the show, Rachel, this might be lost on you, but currently at the Museum of the Moving Image, which is
yes!
a museum in our collective neighborhood,
yes,
there is a Mad Men exhibit they have all kinds of, like, script pages and notes from Anthony Weiner. Not Anthony Weiner. That was the politician.
That's the politician who sent dick pics.
The show, Scott Weiner? No. Matthew Weiner.
Yes.
Matthew Weiner is the creator of Mad Men.
I just saw that exhibit.
Yeah, if you go there, and there's all kinds of costumes and stuff, but there's
sets.
There are a couple of sets there. Like the Draper's,
like his office,
the
is
Draper's
there.
Kitchen from yeah. the, when they were a family, from when they all lived together,
right?
And then his office, his second office, and those are it was pretty amazing.
Oh, that's really cool.
And they also did a recreation of the actual production writers' room with, like, you know, notes and scripts and how it looked when they were plotting out the story arc for the prior to each season.
Oh.
It's actually really fun, and tons of costumes and tons of props.
I will admit that the set pieces and the costumes on that show are phenomenal.
Oh, absolutely.
As someone who nerds
detailed.
Out over
incredibly
costuming.
Detailed. Yeah.
So great.
Oh, man.
So I would like to go and see that exhibition.
Go good.
Just
yeah,
for the
it's happening right now.
Among the costumes, they have they have Joan's dress that's covered in blood from the episode with the riding lawnmower accident.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Oh,
so
I saw that. I was wondering what that was all about.
Yeah.
Because I walked through the exhibit not really knowing anything, because, again, I'd only seen the first season.
Yeah.
But I liked it. It was pretty fascinating. You know, it was like, I like looking at,
sort of behind the scenes ephemera. So,
oh, nice. Yeah. And for those of you listeners who are in the New York area, we will put information about the American Museum of the Moving Image in the doobly-doo.
Awesome.
So you've been binge-watching Mad Men reluctantly.
Yes.
I know I am way late to this party because I am a bad nerd, whatever that means. But I have been finally starting to watch Daredevil on Netflix.
Hey!
And I do it slowly. I don't binge watch anything, but I've watched half of the season, and yeah, it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good. I'm glad you like
it's
really it.
Great. It's so good.
Yeah, it's
nice. Jessica from True Blood is on it. Nobody told me that. I would have watched it a long time ago. She was my favorite character on True Blood. She plays Karen, their secretary.
Oh, okay.
You haven't seen
I've seen Daredevil. I don't know.
Oh, I see.
She played Jessica on True Blood.
I read the book series.
Oh.
And
Sookie Stackhouse.
I just could not.
True Blood was a terrible show.
Yeah.
Okay. I love Daredevil. Everything about that show is just
so
really good.
Great.
Yeah. You guys can't really... You guys have both finished it, right?
Yes.
So you can barely talk to me about it.
Yeah. Well...
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's...
Bring it.
It's... I mean... Yeah, I guess not.
No, yeah. honestly, if you're halfway through it, you kind of
know where it's going.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a superhero story, so you know he's going to win in the end. It's how he gets there that's really, really wonderful to watch.
Honestly, Daredevil is the only, like, it's a new Marvel property that gives me hope, you know? Because they did such a good job of, like,
well, that and, like, Ant-Man has kind of, like, really restored my faith in the Marvel...
It's the Marvel machine, as I have come to call it. The Marvel machine.
I think it's funny that he doesn't even get an entire city to protect. He gets, like, a few blocks.
He gets...
Right, it's Hell's Kitchen.
Hell's Kitchen.
Which they talk about it like it's a borough.
Yeah.
Right, and they talk about it like it's the worst crime ridden hellscape.
They talk about it like it's Hell's Kitchen 30 years ago.
Yeah. Like Hell's Kitchen is actually really nice now. It's pleasant. And
there's like a farmer's market.
There's that restaurant row is right there.
There's a farmer's market that Vincent D'Onofrio rules with an iron fist, and apparently armies of Russians.
Yeah.
Yes.
They're just trying to protect the quinoa.
I think they just got greenlit for season two.
They got greenlit shortly
they're
after.
They're shooting season two.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
They're in it.
Because if you remember from several episodes ago, I have a friend who works on Gotham.
Right.
Who's going to get fired because he sends me pictures from the set all the time. He works on Daredevil now, and he sends me pictures from the set to spoil the appearance of a character on it. And I was like, that's amazing. Thanks. You're going to get fired, dude.
You can't do that.
I asked him if he'd be a guest on the show.
Uh-huh.
And he could talk about what it's like to work on Daredevil and Gotham. And I was like, we'll disguise your voice. We'll do it like it's one of those things.
Oh.
Like we'll put on there and be
like a voice modulator.
So we were working and the Penguin was shooting. It was really inspiring to be.
No, but he won't do it because he did sign an NDA. So.
Yeah, we'll just have to wait.
Well, that's smart.
Yeah,
that's very smart of him.
Yeah, but he shouldn't be sending me pictures of the Punisher from his
cell
phone.
That's dumb. That is actually very dumb.
Oh, wait, the Punisher?
Scoop! You heard it here first on the Epic Podcast.
Or it's all over the internet. Oh, John Bernthal, who was on Walking Dead, is playing Frank Castle.
Oh, okay. I see that. Yeah.
I just spoiled shit to both of you guys.
Yeah.
You know what?
I like honestly, how I was talking to you guys about the show, and I was like, you've both finished it, so don't say anything spoilery. And now I'm telling you shit about season two.
Well, I mean, there had to be some kind of adversary. So, that was going to get leaked before the
damn
thing happened.
Also, I'm never upset about spoilers because I'm obviously in the journey, no matter how I feel about a show. If I'm like, all right, we're doing this, I don't.
Netflix is also doing a Hawkeye TV show.
Really?
With
female. Kate Bishop.
Say what?
Oh my God.
I know. Now, this might be a hoax, but I did see an actual Netflix advertising. It was Hawkeye with a little two over it.
Huh. I would watch that twice.
I don't know if I'm just really sweaty or if I just like.
Well, tell you what, we're gonna after this, we're gonna go to the newsroom and confirm this news. And if it's true, it'll be in the doobly doo. And if it's not, it won't be in the doobly doo.
It'll be in the doobly doo either way, confirming or denying.
Fair enough.
Well, I have to admit, I was actually productive this month.
Oh, that's good. I mean, I was too, but it's just all crappy McCrapper craps.
Yeah, I mean, my band made a music video, so I guess that's.
That's cool. Fun. You did a music. When's that going to release, Dina?
It's already out.
Oh.
Yeah.
How am I just finding about this now?
Because it just came out like earlier this week.
Oh, okay.
Wait. It came out?
Yeah. You're
not just done shooting it?
No, we shot it, we edited it, and we sent it.
Oh.
We're little worker bees.
Yes. All right. Well, that video, what's it called?
It is called Chore Wheel.
And they can find that video on
YouTube.
Excellent. The link of which will be in the doobly-doo.
Done.
So many doobly-doo notes really? this month.
Wait, I want to go back to this Hawkeye 2 thing real
quick.
Please.
That's all I know. I don't know anything. Okay. That is
I
know.
I don't want any details.
I don't have any details.
This is just the thing that I wanted to say because I know that a lot of times we come here and we catch up. We talk about movies and TV shows.
Right.
And I feel like I have to talk about the end of Matt Fraction and David.
The highly anticipated.
Aja?
Oh, I don't know how to pronounce
the
that.
The artist on the Matt Fraction run at Marvel's Hawkeye.
Rachel has not fully read.
I've not finished it yet.
So we got to be careful about any kind of spoilery.
All right. I'm not going to spoil anything. Obviously, I love Matt Fraction and everything that he's done that I've read.
He's so good.
Ever. Sex Criminals continues to be the best book. It's still the best book. If you're still listening to the show and you haven't read Sex Criminals, come on.
What's wrong with you? Why do you hate fun? Go read it.
That said, Sex Criminals is back after several months' absence because Chip Zdarsky is now working on Howard the Duck. And Matt Fraction is working on everything. But Hawkeye, the run that Matt Fraction and David Aja ran, it just ended. The fourth and final trade of that run just came out.
Right.
And that is the best thing that I have read all year.
It's great.
I always liked it. I always liked the way that they took on the character of Hawkeye, who is, I feel, has never really been all that interesting. But Matt Fraction made him so compelling in what a disastrous fuck up of a human being he is.
Yes.
That actually made him kind of compelling to watch the other people around him just like
wash their hands of him all the time.
And just
constantly face palming everything that he's doing.
While he still manages to like pull it together to save the day.
Right. Just long enough to do like the right thing at the very end. Yeah.
Anyway, this story has finally come to an end, and it's sad, I guess, because there isn't going to be more of the story, but I do like comic book stories that aren't just open-ended. I like it when there is an end.
Right.
And so I can't remember the last time I had this much joy reading a trade, because you start reading it and this fourth one, you're like, whoa, this is weird. This is different than the previous three. And it does this kind of weird thing. And then it starts introducing all these new like kind of subplots and characters. And you're like, guys, this isn't what I was reading. I feel like I'm going to be disappointed with this. Then it gets to the last like 30 pages and it becomes the best thing that I have read all year.
Yeah.
I cannot stress enough to go read all of the Matt Fraction run on Hawkeye, especially.
I emphatically agree.
It's
I couldn't agree more.
So good. That comic book is the best movie I've seen this year. It is. Matt Fraction writes in a very cinematic style.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
I love and appreciate.
I will say, and I know you're really ambivalent about this, but the new comic book, the all new Hawkeye series, kind of picks up from where they left off with the sort of misadventures of Hawkeye. And they're in the middle of this mission because they're working for S.H.I.E.L.D. and then all shenanigans break loose. It doesn't have the same kind of deep humanity that the Matt Fraction series does, but it still has a lot of the same sense of humor, a lot of the same sort of quirky sort of byplay between a lot of the characters.
Uh-huh.
I really recommend it. And in this one, you actually get a lot of his history. They're basically mining his childhood for all of the things that happened to him as a kid that made him become Hawkeye.
No, so did this one.
Well, it does. I think it does it here a bit more in depth than the Matt Fraction one.
As long as they can write the character that there is no trace of Jeremy Renner in it, I'm good.
Yes. Please and thank you.
Please, at Marvel MCU, please just write the character out so I don't have to look at his smug-ass face anymore.
No, I don't know. I don't see any hint or hair of him in the new one.
Good.
So,
good.
Yeah. Good.
Can we just write him out?
That is a Nelson tip from me to you.
Nice.
Well, thank you. Maybe I'll look into it. Yeah. I feel like I want to start reading Daredevil books now because I like that show so much.
I've been reading the new Daredevil that's been that Marvel relaunched with its new like Phase 4, I think they call it.
Is that what this?
I don't know what it is, but
I
you're using MCU terminology to describe the comics. You're talking about Marvel now.
Yes, Marvel Now. Thank you. Yes, yes. When they did Marvel Now, I've been reading that Daredevil. His secret identity is now public knowledge. Hmm. He moved to, I believe, San Francisco to start his law practice there.
Oh, I like
and
that.
All hell breaks loose, yo.
Oh, good.
It's good. I highly recommend it.
I got really excited about Matt Murdock even before the series when he showed up in the final trade of that She-Hulk series.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
He does that?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, he showed up as opposing counsel in a trial.
Cute.
I mean, I read that series and I actually wrote a review on that particular comic book. It's predictable, but how it gets there is a whole lot of fun.
Cool.
Wait, the new all new Daredevil.
When he shows up in the She-Hulk comic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's a bit predictable because she's talking about this lawyer from out east who's really, really smart and really good. I'm like, oh
yeah. I mean, I saw it coming too.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's Matt Murdock. And then the last panel is Matt Murdock, but the way it gets there is really good.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I will catch up on that.
Yeah, the She-Hulk series was so good.
Oh, yeah.
I miss it so much already. It was only, what, two trades?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, it got a little dodgy right in the middle when they switched artists for no reason whatsoever. But it ended really strong. I liked it.
You ended really strong.
And on that note, I think it's time for us to...
Wait. Is there anything?
Is there anything else?
I don't know. I mean, I could talk about the show that I just finished been watching.
I did see something a while back that I feel that I should mention.
Oh, do tell.
I was lucky enough to get one of the few tickets to the live stage reading remounted production of Little Shop of Horrors.
You son of a bitch.
You actually did mention this to me in private.
Yes. I feel that.
It wasn't a play. It was a staged reading.
Yeah, it was. I mean, most everyone was off book. I mean, obviously Ellen Green, who originated the role of Audrey.
And who did like a billion performances of it. Yeah.
And re-upped her role in this particular production was completely off book. And Jake Gyllenhaal was Seymour, and he was mostly off book.
Yeah? How was he? Was he good?
He was great, actually.
Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yes.
All right.
He was so good. It was a transcendent night. Guys, I actually...
Was it a sing-along?
No.
Oh.
No, it was blocked out.
Right.
Like a production. It had very minimal sets.
Was it like music stands or was
Yeah,
it...
a couple people used music stands.
Oh, okay.
It was just very like loose and flowy.
I see.
A two night engagement. I saw the second night.
Was the band on stage?
The band was on stage.
Oh, I love those.
Yeah.
Oh.
The way they did the plant was just adorable. When they had little Audrey too, there was just a little boy holding
Aww.
Like a little plant, and they like moved him around like he was a prop. And then in the later storyline, there was the actual singing
character. Sure, sure, sure. Who played Audrey? Audrey too. Sorry.
I don't remember his name. I can put all the info about the show in the doobly doo, like who was who.
But it wasn't like the original.
No. I remember reading in the playbill he had played Audrey II in a touring company of it. But he was amazing.
Nice.
But I do have to admit I did partake in a guilty pleasure.
What's that?
I field reported it.
You field reported it?
I did. Oh. I got some impromptu interviews from the people I saw it with. And if you'd like, I can bring that and we can...
Yes, set it up for us.
All right.
Yeah.
This is from the very end of the show.
Okay.
I whipped out my phone and I proceeded to ask my three companions what they thought.
So who are we listening to? Who are the three companions?
I'll tell you on the tape.
Okay.
I'll announce them. Awesome. Don't worry. This is not my first field report.
Fair enough. All right, let's go to the tape.
It's me again, your other host, Rachel Shank, and I am coming to you post-show of Little Shop of Horrors. I'm here with Mark Robert Turner of After Birth Monkey. In three words, what can you say about the show?
Oh, my God.
I'm here with his fiance, soon-to-be husband, Chris Crouch. In three words, what can you say about the show?
Holy shitballs.
I'm here with Chris's niece, Sophia. In three words, what can you say about the show?
It was good.
You heard it here, folks. It was transcendent.
You. That was incredible. That was wow. That is by far the best field report.
I feel like I was there, and now I hate you. Because I was not there.
I love so Little good. Shop of Horrors more so than anything in the world.
It
was
so good.
Wowzers.
Yeah.
Wowzers.
It was, guys, it was so good.
Well, I read a comic book I really liked, and Rachel's all like, I saw Ellen Green portray Audrey on Broadway.
Right. Yeah, I cried at Somewhere That's Green.
God.
Oh, I always cry on that song.
Wept like a woman.
Somewhere That's Green.
Please don't.
I don't think we should even top that. I think we should go to break.
I got nothing that's going to
Yeah, I got nothing.
That,
seriously. So let's go to break.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Dear Sarah, I know it's been a long time. I heard that you got married. I heard you're doing fine. I heard you bought a house that you're happy and in love. I heard you got your PhD. I heard you had a son. Time flies, girl. How's your brother? How's Seattle? How's your dad? How's your mother? I know I missed you when I last came to town. You dropped off my guitar and then you had to bounce. So many memories in that beat-up case. Big Sur, Idaho, Tahoe, and the Bay. And it was hard, our college changed it all. Thought we'd always be together, but life had proved us wrong. Prom night, you look so young in those photos. When I picked you up in my parents' red Volvo, I wish you nothing but the best, you deserve it. That mean song I wrote, well, I wish you'd never heard it. Power wisdom, I found the Triforce and I'll always let it guide me. Power wisdom, I've got the pieces and they've always been inside me. Power wisdom, I know it's been a while and we rarely speak. I'm letting go these days, guess I found the link. Hey Mary, how's everything in Hyrule? Hard to believe, I've known you since high school. Remember how we met at that Far Side show? One kiss, that was it, thought I'd never let you go. In the mountains we kicked it, so spiritual. You always brought the fire when we freestyled lyrical. Those nights down in Oakland by Lake Merritt were the best. Comic-Con, Amsterdam, South by Southwest. Some nights you made me happy, some nights you made me lazy. Some nights you made me jealous, some nights you made me crazy. Some nights you made me laugh, some nights we just relaxed. You made that food delicious, I'll admit you made me fat. So I had to move on, found support online. I threw away the tools that had kept you in my life. Found freedom at last when I realized that this ocarina of time had kept me stuck in the past. I found the Triforce and I'll always let it guide me. I've got the pieces and they've always been inside me. No longer will I let you consume or define me. I had to let you go and leave that dark world behind me. Dear Andrew, how you been, dude? What's new? It's been a minute since I last checked in with you. I know it's hard watching mom and dad get older, but realize that they're proud of their little rapper soldier. Wish that you could give them grandkids pretty soon, but your schedule on the road doesn't leave a lot of room. Plus it's master of the suitcase, master of the sublet. It's not honestly ready to be a dad yet. Wish you had a real place to keep all your stuff, cause these storage locker bills, they keep piling up. You hope your sister's not alone forever, and that your Uncle Joel somehow gets better. Losing touch with friends cause you're always on the go, fighting with your girl out in London on the phone. Ignore the surface and the shadows, you'll be fine, dude. You've got your music and amazing fans behind you. I found the Triforce and I'll always let it guide me. I've got the pieces and they've always been inside me. You're talking negative, but I can't even hear you. I'm watching Get Beat My Dust in the rear view.
And now, a brief word from the Nerdy Show Network. Hello there, I'm Schaefer the Dark Lord from the Epic Podcast, speaking on behalf of all of us here at the Nerdy Show Network. We need your feedback. Whether you listen to all of our podcasts, some of our podcasts, nerdy.fm, read our articles, watch our videos, or have any kind of opinion on something we do, we want to make sure that your Nerdy Show Network experience is the absolute best. That's why we've made a survey so that you can let us know what you like the most, what you like the least, how you connect with our content, and if we're lucky, how to evolve Nerdy Show into the Charizard of nerd entertainment networks forever and ever. please take a moment to complete our survey at nerdyshow.com/survey. That's nerdyshow.com/survey. From all of us here at the Nerdy Show Network, we thank you for your time. Ladies and gentlemen, before we bring on our guest this month, I want to read a letter from the mailbag that we've been sleeping on since July 10th. This letter came to us from a Jay Derelict, who wrote, "Dear Schaefer, Nelson, and Rachel, as you seem to have not had a field report for a while, I hope you don't mind me filing a field report from your Pittsburgh office. It features a guest who should have been on the podcast already. Your friend, Jay." All right, let's take a listen to Jay Derelict's field report.
Hi, Epic Podcasters. This is your field reporter, Jamie Derelict, in Pittsburgh. I'm at the Warp Tour, and I'm here with a friend of yours.
Hello, Semsi Lars with the Warp Tour field report on the Schaefer the Dark Lord Nelson Lugo podcast. I'm kidding. We're doing a parody.
It's really loud here. It's really rainy here. You should be here.
You should be here. I love you.
All right. This is the field report. Over and out.
Oh. Thank you so much, Jay Derelict, for doing our job for us. That's delightful.
As head of field reports here at the Epic Podcast, I noted there was a certain cute little young woman missing from the thing.
where are you going with this, Richard?
I'm sad that I'm not there.
I see.
I didn't get to be a part of that field report.
I think it's awfully arrogant of him to just assume that he can field report for us. Quite frankly.
Mr. Derelict, if you would like to do field reports, I am happy to travel to the places that you are. I will help you field report.
Ladies and gentlemen, our guest on the program this month has made a name for himself creating post-punk laptop rap. Please welcome to the program, MC Lars.
Hooray!
Yay!
Hello! Hello! Hello, Epic Podcast listeners.
It's almost like we planned this.
Huh.
It's so nice to have, you know, we've never had a guest that we've like had call in on Skype or whatever. We've only had guests who were in the studio. So we could have called you up a long time ago, but we waited until we were actually able to have you physically here.
Yes.
And
yeah.
And that patience has paid
so
off.
So I can reach out and touch you.
Do it.
Yeah.
Oh, they touched.
They fived.
Hello, Lars. Welcome. Welcome to the,
please,
the podcast.
Welcome.
Hello,
aboard.
Rachel. Hello, Mark. Hello, Nelson.
Oh, my.
So formal.
That was, honestly, I felt really, like, not formal about that.
It's like a friendship circle, though.
Oh, we're like, oh, we should have drums.
So, Lars, you have been incredibly busy for the past 10 years, but specifically this summer, you just got off of Warp Tour.
Ooh.
Is that correct?
That is correct. We did our third summer on the Vans Warped Tour. And I was joined by the lovely and talented Ash Wednesday from Handjob Academy.
Oh,
nice. Oh, very cool.
And my drummer, John Thatcher Longley.
Oh, clean up your house.
Yeah, and his house, he cleaned up the house with them drum solos.
Oh. He is a really good drummer.
For people who don't know, in 2009 on my album, This Chicken and Robot Kills, I had a song, and the title of the song was My Drummer's Address. And the song was about how messy his house was and how he was like living a life of squalor and like derelict musicianhood. But now every time I introduce him or anytime he's doing merch, people go, "Are you John? Clean up your house, bro." And the joke has long like lost its humor for him.
He was over that joke in 2010. I remember when we were on the MC Chris tour, people were still like, "Hey man, clean up your house." And he just had this defeated sigh.
He was over that joke before the album even came out.
Oh dear.
Love you, John.
He's a good sport.
I have an important question. Is his house clean now?
Yes. He lives in Tampa, Florida, and he has the cleanest apartment ever. It's like basically like we made a point.
He got the message.
Wait, he and Joe both move?
Well, they don't live together anymore.
Oh.
Wow. You remember Joe? Yeah, Joe was on tour with us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Joe, our sound engineer, and he produced a lot of my third record, this called Lars Attacks. Joe's a good, great guy. Shout out to Joey Flash.
Joe Flash.
I just want to tell all of the internet, if you meet Lars's drummer, do not tell him to clean up his house.
Yeah, get over it, internet.
It's done.
Kenny, it's an old joke.
Put
just
that
stop.
Baby to
knock
bed.
It off.
He appreciates that a lot more than you know.
Internet, don't be a dick, okay? Leave him alone.
So I'm curious about what the experience on Warped Tour is like, because to me, you have a much more positive attitude about being a live performer than I do. I am.
Everybody has a better attitude of being a live performer than
I don't know. I see you doing these. It seems like you do like 30 dates and they're in the sun and they're these all day shows and you just have this unfailing enthusiasm throughout the whole thing. What is it like doing the Warped Tour, an outdoor show all summer long?
That's a great question, Mark, and I'm glad you asked it. You know, this, the club show we did Tuesday, Saturday, with Weedus and Handjob Academy and you and me, that felt so easy because you roll up, it's like, whoa, you don't have, like, you get there at 5 mm-hmm. as opposed to 7 a.m. Because at Warped Tour, you wake up at 7 a.m., you wheel your merch and your tent out, and you fight 100 bands for the best merch spots. It's like very Darwinian. You find your spot. You get told 7 times to move your tent because this is where the ice cream truck goes, this is where this blah, blah, blah. Then you go. Then you bring your drummer breakfast because he sleeps till 9 every day. And then and then you come back, and then you set up your merch. And then you go and pace the venue with 100 posters. Then once you've done that with your set times, you go try to talk to every kid in line for an hour and a half and high-five them and talk about, oh, your shirt, My Little Ponies. Oh, my gosh, that's ironic. You're a guy. Guess what? I make nerd rap. I play at 1140. Come watch. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Oh, I love your Legend of Zelda chain. Yeah, it's fake, but I still play it. Oh, my gosh, yeah, Warped Tour, blah, blah, blah. Eclectic music. Oh, my gosh. And you high-five everyone. And sometimes when people don't high-five you in line, you go, that was tight. That was tight. When people are too cool. Then everyone at 11 a.m., everyone comes rushing in. And by the way, shout out to Kevin Lyman, who runs the festival, because he's up at like he's up all day at 7 a.m. making sure the kids get in. Like, he's very hands on. Anyway, the kids come in. You try to, like, every kid who comes by your merch booth, you try to talk to him or her, tell him when you're playing, and then you play. Then you do press for like an hour and a half. But and then you have to bring 3 meals to your drummer while he's sitting at the merch tent. And then and then at 8 o'clock you pack up, load your stuff in the trailer, and then you're on the road by 10 usually.
What? So the whole show is wrapped by 8?
Yeah, because most of the venues are in parking lots, so there's not, like, lighting. So once the sun sets, everything packs up. But it's all mobile. Like, all the stages are on trucks. It's all generators. And it's just incredible. And it's been 21 years. So it's...
Warped Tour's been going strong for 21 years?
Since it's the longest-running North American festival, summer
Good
festival.
Good gravy.
That's very cool.
It's tight, right? Yeah. It's tight.
Do you give yourself how much of a break do you give yourself once you finish something like that before you go?
Yeah, do you just like veg out for like a month Ooh. Afterwards or?
No, the first thing I want to do is the podcast. I come and do podcasts with my friends. We Ashley and I went to Lake Tahoe and then we went to Big Sur and then we're just chilling in New York this month. So it's kind of low key.
Sure. Like, mm-hmm. Sure, sure, sure.
But yeah, it's exhausting.
Are you picking up any sort of just ad hoc gigs as you're kind of taking it easy? And
I'm doing a Labor Day show with Less Than Jake in Gainesville, and then we did the show with Weedus, and then I'm doing some shows in October.
Nice.
So it's pretty tight. It's pretty tight. It's pretty tight. But yeah, it is pretty full on. And it's like, but the thing is, after you rap and stuff like that, well, rap with a W and rap without a W, whatever, puns. After that, it's very, very like full on. Everyone's hanging out all the time, and it's like you're camping. And so you meet, like, you hang out with all these like death metal bands and like post hardcore bands and DJs. And so I've met a lot of people from different scenes, and I think like I owe a lot of the guests on my records to Warped Tour because I've met them all through that because I do a lot of like pop punk and ska stuff, and I met all these people through that community. So it's tight. And also shout out to MC Chris because he did it a few years and he kind of opened the doors for me. Like, he put in a good word for me. So thanks, Chris.
Oh, really? I thought it went the other way. I thought like he got it after you had done it.
No, he did it like in 2008, I think.
Oh, okay.
And then he kind of like opened the doors for nerd rap or whatever. But yeah, it's kind of like he and I kind of alternate years. But
you've done it 3 years. Is it 3 years in a row?
Tres años, mi amigo.
Whoa.
That's French. No, it's Spanish. They tried to change it up. So I did it 11, 13, and 15. In 2011, I was in a group with the drummer from Code in Cambria, Weird Science. He raps. And so we were like a group.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so that was tight. That was tight. So here we are.
Hey.
You were having to set up. Every day you're setting up your tent. You don't have like pre-determined spaces where your merch tents go up. Were you always next to Kosha Dills on this tour?
Yes. Most every day I was next to him or 110 away. So he was on a bus with us and we shared a drummer. So I became very close with Rami.
Oh,
this year.
Okay.
Have you met him?
Yes, I have, because we
who
do
is this?
The,
I don't know who this is.
Well, we've been doing the same South by Southwest showcase every year for like 6 years now. And that's how I met Kosha Dills, because he hasn't always been on those shows, but he's always there. He always shows up at the. He's a rapper.
Okay,
and he shows up at shows. Yeah. And he shows up. He's always got like handful of CDs, and he's passing them out.
Okay.
But then I saw pictures like that when Lars was posting pictures from Warped Tour of his tent. I saw like a Kosha Dills tent, and I was like, Kosha Dills, guy who's always who shows up at the end of the night at the South by show.
He crushed it this year. He worked really hard. He sold CDs to everyone. Like, he'd be up there selling CDs to people coming in, people leaving. He'd be like, yo, let me freestyle for you. And then he'd be like, if you like my freestyle, buy a CD. Because he's a street performer, really.
Yeah.
And he crushed it. And he worked really hard. And
he is unfazed at promotion. Also a thing that I can't relate to. Like, you have this indomitable positive outlook on life, and he has this indomitable drive to promote his act. These are just two things to which I have a struggle relating, because I hate everything.
He is hungry. He is hungry for success. Yeah. And I think it's like, he's one of those guys who he's legendary. Everyone knows Kosha Dills. He's everywhere. And if you don't know him, you will know him. So shout out to Kosha Dills.
You know, a couple of years ago, there was a when during
what
our
Kosha Dills?
A couple of years ago, one of the local weeklies in Austin to promote our South by Showcase ran an article that was the top five Jewish rappers you have to see at South by Southwest this year, and both he and I were on it.
And are you Jewish?
I am not Jewish.
No.
But he and I were both on in the article, and I was like, I talked to him about it that night when he showed the thing. I was like, yo, we were in that article, and he was like, yeah, that was tight. And I'm like, I didn't have the heart to tell him that I'm actually Gentile.
Great. His inroad into rap is he was Modest Yahoo's hype man.
He
you
was
guys
what?
Know Modest Yahoo?
He's
he toured with him a lot.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And that's his big homie. So that Modest Yahoo kind of. Was his mentor in the rap game. So
very cool.
Pretty tight.
So what are you doing when you're not on the Warped Tour? Like in those in between years?
I've been just throwing high fives.
He does it.
Also, I would like the listeners to know, I have never been high fived this many times on the podcast in the entire 3 years.
This is probably the most times you've ever been high fived in your life.
Like ever.
In a day at least. Okay. Yes. So what are you doing in the off years? And another high five.
That's a good question. Jeez. I put out an Edgar Allan Poe album. I put out an album called Lars Attacks that was very serious and sad. And then
I find that hard to believe.
I did some one-offs with my favorite rappers in the nerd rap community.
Sure.
And I toured with Chris, and I went to England a lot, and Europe, and Australia, and New Zealand.
Oh, that's right. I do remember that. Yeah. I remember looking at your Facebook feeds. And seeing all of the pictures from, like, did you go to Scotland at one point?
Oh, yeah. We were up there eating haggis and rapping. It was tight. Not
rapping
in that order.
Haggis.
Wait, actually in that order.
Nice.
And I signed an artist to my label, and I had a Horse Records as my label. I put out a record from one of my friends, Weird Science. And
wait, is that the first non-MC Lars release on your label?
First non-MC Lars release.
Because I know it was a label you started back with your first album. That was your first album. Your first album was on that label.
That's right, and I partnered with BMG for that.
That was the laptop.
Whoa! How'd you know that?
I've known you
laptop
for years.
Laptop EP.
The laptop EP. Yeah.
Yeah. And then my second album was called Manslaughterer.
No, that was that was your friend. That was your friend Mark's third album.
Oh,
that's what that was.
And then I did a record about, like, with a lot of metaphors about New York and, like, about my own personal growth, and it was really well produced well mixed with great videos.
Okay. Oh dear.
Oh wait, that was your last record.
Thank you so much.
Oh yeah, that was Sick Passenger. Look for it on the doobly doo.
Yo, what's up with Apple? What is Apple Music? Can someone explain that to me real quick?
Apple Music?
I don't really understand what Apple Music
is. You pay for it, but I already own the songs, and Spotify already does the job.
It's like a streaming music service, right? Like you pay by it feels like. Isn't it a business model that was tested by like a few other companies and failed like years ago?
I think it's like they're using the proprietary hardware of everyone's Apple systems, because when you open iTunes, it's like Apple Music, want to join 3 months free, and you're like, I already have like 40 million songs.
So then it just streams music from their library.
It's basically Apple's version of Spotify. That's really what it is.
Is that what it is?
Yeah,
and it's just because it's
It's not doing well.
When is it launched?
I will take your word for it. I don't know.
I recall getting the update on my phone and then opening my music app, and it was like, "Hey, do you want to pay money for music?" And I went,
"No,
no."
Well, why would I pay more money? I already have Spotify.
Yeah.
Well, I think I noticed that Dre's new record isn't on Spotify, but it is on Apple Music.
Tay Swift took all of her stuff off Spotify too.
So it's kind of like they're strong arming the bigger brands into being.
Do you think they're getting a better deal?
Probably a higher percentage because everyone's so mad at Spotify. I ain't mad at Spotify though. Props to Spotify. Every month, Spotify is very kind to me, and so
you're getting checks.
I love Spotify.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you're on at least a couple of my nerd rap mixes. So
are you serious?
Yeah, I'm a hip hop head.
That's tight.
Listen, don't let my outward appearance fool you.
You play your cards right, Rachel. You're gonna get the Raven puppet cameo during the finale of his set one of these days.
I wanted to thank you because you let me do the Raven puppet for at the last Nerdapalooza that we did, and I had a shit ton of fun doing that.
You marked it.
I what now?
You killed it.
Okay.
And then They Might Be Giants came on stage.
And they sucked the air out of the room.
And they sucked the funding out of that festival.
Yes. Oh, no.
they definitely took the money out of it, so nobody got paid.
They killed it. They killed it, though.
No, they didn't. You're being very, very kind.
No, they're awesome. Particle Man is tight.
Yeah, well, you know, the songs that everybody knows and loves was great. The songs that nobody cared about, it's so...
I don't know. I still liked them.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I was disappointed. Istanbul song.
I was disappointed in that set, to be honest.
They opened with it.
Yeah. In fact. Which is weird. Why would you open with your most popular... Anyway.
Were you guys at Orlando Nerd Fest this year?
No.
But who... Chris was there, right? Rachel, were you down there?
No.
Chris was there. Who else?
MC Chris?
Raheem. Yeah. Raheem was there.
Raheem. Was Damien?
No.
No.
Was former Fat Boys?
No.
Who played?
Richie Branson.
He's awesome.
Warrock? Who?
No.
Adam,
no.
Eugene? No.
No. It was a bunch of, it was like a bunch of locals.
A lot of locals and like MC Chris and Raheem. And
yeah. Chris
is
dope
Raheem. Though. That's tight. Yeah.
Yeah.
How do I get on that train? I've got some stuff.
You're asking the wrong person. I didn't get to do it this year.
Who does it? Is it Hex still?
No.
No.
Hex was Nerdapalooza, and then now it's Chozo.
Chozo, who's the man. Shout out to Eric Wright, the original Eazy-E. His real name is Eric Wright.
It is.
Did you know that?
I did know that.
And he's actually not the original Eazy-E because of something called chronology.
Yes. He is younger. He is younger than the late Eazy-E.
Have you guys seen Straight Outta Compton?
No, I was going to ask you.
No, have you seen it?
I was going to go last night, and then I didn't.
Oh, you haven't seen it yet?
You know what? Let's blow this off. Let's all go to the theater right now.
Dude, let's fucking go.
When we wrap, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go see a late show.
Fuck yeah. No, I can't. I can't.
But you guys are tight. You guys are tight.
But I want to see it this weekend. Let's see it this weekend.
Okay.
Can we field report it?
Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah.
I want to see Straight Outta Compton.
Me too.
You know, I want to ask you something, Lars.
What? Oh, shit's going to get real now.
I really like all three of you, by the way. This is a tight podcast.
We've been delighted for months knowing that you were coming.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah. No, as soon as we heard that you were going to be on, we've been waiting but with bated breath for this day.
Shaver said Lars is going to be on in August, and I was like, "You know that's my birth month, right?"
What birthday?
August 4th.
Oh, happy previous birthday.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much. It happened. It's fine. It's really, guys, it's not a big deal. It happened. It's over. I just am excited that Lars is here.
August 4th be with you.
Thank you. And also with you.
Thank you.
Drop your question.
All right, now
hit him.
I want to talk about this, and I asked you about this before we started recording.
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
Do you do any vocals for your record in this apartment?
Yes.
All of them.
And do you comp your verses like Damien, or do you just... Yeah. All right.
That's... Not well. Well, I comp my verses not like Damien. I don't record 10 takes of every line.
For anyone who hasn't seen Damien's sessions for his vocals, MC Frontalots.
Oh my god.
It looks like the Fibonacci sequence had a baby with a helix, double helix DNA strand. There's more color in that than a Richard Pryor stand-up comedy routine.
I did a guest verse for him a few years ago, and I couldn't record my parts and send them to him because I lived in the same city. So I went to his apartment, and we recorded for like 2 hours. This is 16 bars.
But you killed it.
Well, I thought I did, and then a couple weeks later, he called me up and was like, we're going to need to redo it. And I went back for like another 2 hours.
Which song?
Disaster.
Oh, yeah.
But it was. Oh, yeah. But I remember seeing his sessions when we were there, and I was like, you really don't throw anything away during the process.
But you know what's amazing? That Karl Marx talks about how time is a big commodity, and I think what's incredible about Damien is that, like, for all my records, I've hired engineers and producers and, like, paid them a lot to do that job. He sits down and does it because he's such, like, a focused, smart computer guy. So it's like, it's incredible, which means he has unlimited capacity to make unlimited records because all the overhead is just his rent for his apartment,
yeah.
Which is very punk rock.
Well, that's, I mean,
I guess it is actually.
I kind of behave similarly in that, like, I don't go to a studio to record my I do all my vocals so that I have control of all of the editing and comping on my end, but I still send them to somebody else to mix them.
So who mixed Sick Passenger?
A guy named Cecil Decker.
Oh, yeah. I think I met him.
Yeah?
I've emailed him.
He's in the Carolinas.
He is a really good mixing engineer.
Yeah, he did a really great job.
Shout out to Cecil Decker, son.
What up, Cecil?
I was waiting. I was like, he's going to give a shout out. I got so excited.
Cecil, I'll see you at the Grammys, Cecil. When Kendrick Lamar asks you to mix his next record proprietary exclusive to Apple Music. I don't know. Well, probably because of the Dre connection. I'm just thinking corporations, art, hip-hop, money, power.
You create a link there between Kendrick Lamar and Dre.
Dre did his first big record.
How to Pimp a Butterfly?
Mad City.
Oh. Okay.
Did you know that?
No.
He's Dre's protege.
Oh, I thought that was still in that like nebulous 10-year period where Dre was pretending to be working on a record that never came out.
Well, anyway, they're working together.
Okay.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, nice.
Well, at least I think so. That's what the internet told me. Maybe wrong.
I mean, the internet is not a perfect vehicle for information.
Hey, if it's on the internet, right. It must be true.
Okay, this is what I want to ask you about.
Yeah, so you like I derailed the whole conversation?
Because I know you don't want to talk about this.
10 minutes of talking about recording.
A few years ago, you got into a little bit of hot water. You wrote a piece entitled Nerdcore is Dead. Was that what it was titled?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Where you were kind of talking about a little bit of unchecked privilege among nerdcore artists, specifically white nerdcore artists, and how they were operating from the assumption that likening their experience as being a nerd was comparable to that of being an African American, and basically the struggle that so many hip-hop artists before us had come across. And so many people took such offense to this, such defensive offense to this. I just wondered what like the fallout was like. Did you anticipate that you were going to get that much of a backlash?
Before we get into the fallout, I'd like to know like what the impetus was. Like what sort of created this space where you felt you needed to speak on this subject? Like, what was happening in your scene where you just went, I can't watch this anymore without saying something? I personally would like to know.
I think a lot of people were asking me to listen to their albums, and I noticed that a lot of these people weren't taking my advice to, like, listen to Nas and Rakim and KRS-One and Run-DMC and Public Enemy and even Tupac and all Wu-Tang Clan. I was like, people were like, what do you think of my album? I was like, well, I think it might behoove you to listen to the people who invented rap music before doing a fourth generation parody of it. And that was kind of my honest perspective. And then people were like, well, hip hop has become so multicultural that, you know, just like jazz and rock, we don't really need to focus on its cultural history. And we don't need to give props to the people who laid the tracks for the culture. And that kind of irked me because then people would like, you know, people would do really like thick African-American accents and like use a lot of hip-hop slang, and it just was offensive to me as someone who's like a student of the culture, who obviously I didn't grow up on the street, and like I'm not first generation hip-hop by any means, but I wanted people to like, my point was saying, don't liken the nerd experience to the experience of being someone who's been given who's had a hard time in America because of your race or your gender or your class or your sex or anything. I mean, and that's kind of like my point. And then that got reinterpreted, and it's almost like if you say something on the internet, people reinterpret it and love to do sound blurbs out of context. I don't know. Have you ever heard of this phenomenon?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. It's called Reddit. If you've ever been there, don't
go. It's whatever makes a tasty headline that just can't, is irresistible to your clicker.
No, what exactly was this? Was this a blog post? Was this a Facebook thing? Like, where did you put this?
It was on my WordPress on my site.
Oh, I see.
Actually, I think it was on my MC Lars blog spot, and I'd never gotten more traffic to my site. And I was like, wow, this is interesting. And but Sage Francis, like, I like apologize and blah, 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 blah. What I think irked people is I listed the nerdcore rappers that I liked. And every nerdcore rapper who was a friend of mine who wasn't on that list was mad. And I think they had a right to be mad. Because I basically said, this genre is whack, except for these homies. And then people who were my homies were like, whoa, well, how come, you know. And
they felt left out and they felt included in the rabble who doesn't particularly care about the source material.
Right.
Who doesn't understand the social history of the genre and want to stand on the shoulders of the giants who created it.
Right.
I think there was a lot of entitlement that really bothered me. And kids coming to shows, giving me demos, telling me how dope they were and how much hip hop sucks. And I'm like, well, how much hip hop do you listen to? That bothered me. That you can't talk about how hip hop sucks if you never listen to hip hop. I think hip hop's great. And I think even the trap stuff and even the party music, all of that has a place. So don't be don't make a generalization. But in putting that blog out, I made a generalization. I hurt some feelings. For that, I feel bad. But I don't feel bad about asking people who are practicing a culture to try to research and understand the musical form in which they exist.
Well, I think that's true. That's true of any any legitimate art form needs to understand where it came from in order to create something new.
Especially when it's as racially charged as white folks borrowing black people's music.
Right.
And I feel like, especially, given how much I've gotten this over the years, you've surely gotten a lot of it too, where you get a lot of audience members who will want to come up to you and say things like, hey, you know, I hate hip hop, but I love what you do. And that is such a compliment that is not a compliment, because it's such an insult to what it is that you care about and to what it is that's inspired you.
Yeah.
It feels like they're saying, oh, thanks for making a thing that you enjoyed safe for me to enjoy.
Well,
Here's
an example. So when Lucas did the Star Wars movies, he studied the Jungian archetypes and Joseph Campbell and all of the mythology that he brought together in creating the characters in the Star Wars universe. And
when extensive research.
When he broke his leg, right? He got in a car accident and he studied all those books. And the reason why Star Wars is great is because, for many reasons, but one, because it taps into all of these universal themes and characters and things we can identify with. The best, quote-unquote, nerdcore rappers were the ones, my friends like MC Chris and Frontalot and U Schaefer and Raheem and everyone who I could have extensive conversations about hip-hop with. And I kind of found a correlation where, okay, if you respect the culture and have studied the records, it shows in your music. And that's what I was saying. I was basically saying, make good music. Understand what if you study the craft, you can do it better. No one can totally reinvent the wheel. That's my opinion. Even the new school nerd rappers like Watsky and Lil Dicky and everyone who's doing really well in the YouTube game, they've all studied hip hop in a very smart, intelligent way too. And I think that's so important, because if you don't, you're making a mockery of the culture. And yes, you could be a hobbyist, but do it with respect. That's all I have to say.
Definitely. I'm gonna add to what you're saying by bringing it to more visual artists. Visual artists shouldn't and don't go into the world of creating paintings or sculptures without studying their forebears. Why?
Fair enough.
I don't feel that music should be any exception. I know full well that having a love and appreciation of a genre can help promote that art that you're making when you understand what came before you.
I think that's true of any art form that is sort of recognized as being a legitimate works of art, whether it's ballet or even in the magic world. You know, when I was studying magic, the history of it was drilled into me so profoundly that I can't even think of creating anything new without thinking about the 100 people before me who perfected the techniques that I'm learning now, you know. And it's and magicians who who come and just basically study the next hot sleight of hand. You never hear of them because they don't care about the history. They don't care about the people who created it in the first place. And it's just, it's sort of, I guess nerdcore is such a young art form that it's still in its growing pains, technically speaking.
Yep.
And it's kind of whining about wanting to be recognized as its own thing. Like, it's basically rebellious teenagers, like, this ain't your granddaddy's music. I'm doing the new shit. Like, well, you wouldn't have to do new shit if there wasn't your fucking granddaddy's music.
Yeah. I know that over the years I've gotten, like, emails from time to time, and you've probably gotten these too, that were like, I'm an aspiring young nerdcore rapper. Can you give me advice? And every time I've gotten one of those, I either don't respond to it, or I say, stop, whatever it is that you're trying to do. Stop listening to me and Lars and Frontalot and start listening to Kool Moe Dee and Slick Rick and Public Enemy and start
Juicy J.
Yeah, start trying to be a rapper. Like, yeah. Be a rapper first and then decide what it is that you want to talk about. But, like, listen to hip hop first. Stop listening to people who have listened to hip hop and start listening to hip hop.
Yeah, start from the beginning. And then build upon that.
And then start listening to the people who have been inspired and have created something new with it.
Get your basics in.
Yeah.
Sorry, Rachel, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's elementary, guys.
Yeah.
Go to the kindergarten of hip hop.
Exactly.
Start with the Sugar Hill Gang.
Get in. Sugar Hill Gang!
Rachel with the history. A great history for the nerds is Ed Piskor's Hip Hop Family Tree graphic novel series. What is it? Fantagraphics? Is that the company?
Yeah.
The third series just came out, the third volume, and it's just the history from Kool Herc. Although he's doing the history of hip hop till now, and he did it for Boing Boing, I think it started. And it's a beautiful, amazing series. And like anyone who's into nerd rap and comic books, it's such a great history. Because in the back, he has the discography of every song he referenced, and it's just the history of rap. Going back to the samples, like the Winstons and James Brown, and all the original source material for rap. So that's amazing. That's my favorite comic book series ever.
And what is that called again?
Hip Hop Family Tree.
Hip Hop Family Tree.
We'll put
that
in the doobly-doo.
Right in the doobly-doo.
Frontalot got me into it.
Very cool.
It's tight.
Didn't hip hop celebrate a really important anniversary this month?
Oh, it was the 40th anniversary of the first block party that Kool Herc threw?
Yeah.
August 11th?
I believe so. Up in the South Bronx, right?
That just happened?
1520 Sedgwick Avenue.
Which is
gone now.
Oh, that avenue doesn't exist anymore?
No, it exists. Technically the building exists, but like there's no space that has been preserved as like sort of
as a
historical space.
It's just a neighborhood that's been gentrified or what have you.
Yeah.
I did the Grandmaster Caz hip hop history tour where he takes you around in the van and raps to you and takes you all the sites where Afrika Bambaataa played and everything. And
really?
It's great. And you go out there. It's dope. It's called the hip hop oral culture history tour, but it's awesome. Jason Tanz talks about it in his wonderful hip hop history book, Other People's Property. And I decided to take it. I took it in the summer of 2011, and then I interviewed one of the original Cold Crush brothers for this book project I was working on. So anyway, shout out to that tour.
Nice.
Literally the hip hop tourism tour.
Hip hop tourism. It's real.
Shoot. And there were a bunch of, it was all international people, and me and then my friend who's an editor, and they were all very interested in it. So
very
props.
Cool.
Awesome.
I do want to bring it back to Schaefer's initial question. Besides the quote unquote hurt feelings of non-mentioned colleagues, what sort of became the story after your story? What was sort of like the crowd response to your article about nerdcore being dead? I would like to know.
Well, that year was Nerdapalooza's like second year or something, and we went, and Schaefer performed at the opening night, and he did this funny joke where he kind of like, there was so much tension, everyone was like, Lars, you jerk, you're disrespecting our genre the night before we fly you in, blah, blah, blah. And Schaefer goes, I just wanted to say that nerdcore, what you said something like, nerdcore has died, and so has post-punk laptop rap. Genres are dying every day. What can we do about this? Then you did your set.
I said that?
You made like a funny joke about it, and everyone was laughing.
I, I don't. That sounds like that sounds kind of insulting. I don't.
It was sight. It was sight.
I don't recall doing that.
And then I did a podcast. I was doing this YouTube series, and I interviewed everyone about their thoughts on Nerdcore. And both the people who watched that YouTube video thought it was very interesting. Like, no one wanted to hear that. No one wanted to hear what happened. But no one. Like, it was all about the story of what I said, not the repercussion. But I think, like, recently, the artists from that era. I guess it's almost like 10 years ago since the genre was born. The ones who are still putting out records are doing good stuff. And I think, like, the artists who were kind of like hobbyists have stopped, or, like, you know, it's kind of like I embrace the term more these days, because it's like it describes what the genre is. And I think, like, now the artists who have survived are all pretty dope. And I don't think new artists are really coming up saying they're nerdcore. Like Watsky, I don't think would ever consider himself a nerdcore artist. And I think that's cool, because it's like an era. This was like, if you put out independent music from 2004 to 2011 and you, like, listen to Schaefer and Chris and whatever, then you're maybe in that world. But I think it's kind of become this timepiece.
Yeah. I don't. I mean, anybody who, the people who were making the biggest stink about this when it happened, they're not making stuff anymore.
So it's kind of funny. I mean, it's kind of, my point proved itself. But shout out to everyone who wrote diss songs. You know, it was tight.
It's fun. It was tight. So flattering when you get a diss song.
Aww.
It's so sweet.
I remember being really flattered the first time I heard one. I was like,
I want a diss song. Somebody write a diss song about me.
Yo, Nelson Lugo, your magic is erratic. I see you holding the puppets and you never act spastic. By that I mean dropping the puppet when you're trying to do magic. Harry Houdini looks at you and he's like, man, your emulation is tragic.
Oh.
And then he's like,
burn.
And then he's like, just kidding. You're always winning. I like the way you've got those plates that you're always spinning. You had a card that you surprised us with somewhere else. Yo, Nelson, keep doing your art because it's good for your health.
And then you burned me, and then you resurrected me.
That was great.
Yeah. Lazarus.
MC Laz.
All diss songs.
That was the most joyful diss freestyle I've ever
so
heard.
Lovely. It was
because
like,
at the end, you brought him back. You resuscitated him.
No.
You can edit that out.
No.
Good God, no.
Wonderful.
I
love when freestyle rapping just happens on this podcast. I do, actually, since you did mention that you feel that nerdcore sort of lived in this particular moment at this particular time. Not that I believe in the need to label oneself as an artist, like do what you do in the way you want to do it. But now that we do live in what is the post-nerdcore universe for new and upcoming artists that sort of are familiar with hip-hop culture and want to create the art in the way that they can based on their experiences, what would you want to term that, and what advice would you want to give to those particular artists?
That is a really good question, Rachel.
Oh, thank you, Lars.
Very lucid and clearly spoken.
Oh, my.
I think that I get this question a lot. I get emails and messages every day, and I always email people back, and I'm like, look, the three things you need to have longevity as an artist these days. The first is you need an interesting story. Like, why should we care about your intellectual property? Where are you from? What's your story? What are you trying to say?
Right.
The second is make a great record. And to promote that great record, make incredible YouTube videos that are just fun and interesting and topical and good and well-produced. And that's where I've mentioned him like twice now, but Watsky like crushed it with the YouTube videos. The third, make sure your live show, and Schaefer's got this nailed, of course. Make sure your live show is very energetic and fun and like makes people engage. Don't just be standing there with your mic like not moving or not telling jokes or not like bringing the audience in.
Yeah, be excited about what you're doing. Yeah.
Have passion. And you can't learn to do a great show except by muscle memory and doing like hundreds of open mics and like lugging equipment and setting up PAs and then opening
and
for your
failing
first
100 times.
Failing 100 times. You're not just going to get on stage and like be an amazing rapper.
Oh, goodness, no.
So those three things, and like having a story, having a great record that you promote with great YouTube videos, and having a good live show. If you do that and put out four amazing records, you're going to have some sort of longevity. And even if it's small, you're going to be able to like make a name for yourself. So the key to being a successful artist, I think, is just not stopping. And I think like that's the advice I tell young people. It's not going to be instantaneous. Get your college degree, like use those resources, but just put stuff out, because nowadays, like we're talking about Front a lot, you can do an album and a video and a record for like $3,000, $4,000. And like back in the day, it was like like a few hundred thousand to do that well. So the playing fields have leveled, and that's what I tell people. And I also say that, like, make sure that you're, you know, not trying to emulate what's on the radio, because if you do that, by the time people hear your music, it'll already sound dated. So just do you, but like, make sure you stand out. And also I say to rappers, make your own beats, because like, if you can do your own beats, you're going to sound unique. That's all.
And I would imagine, you know, the technology for making music is just getting easier and easier every day. Like, you know, there's the resources to that kind of power and program is just getting more user friendly. So would you also recommend just like basic understanding of the tools that you need to make all that happen, right?
Like, you can do so much on GarageBand, and it's like,
it's the very bare minimum of multi-track recording. You can learn things there until you extinguish its I don't know, functionality for you, and then you can like step up to something else.
Right. Yeah,
like,
definitely. As a comedy duo, Afterbirth Monkey, we build a lot of our stuff on GarageBand because we're definitely very new still.
It's our incredibly accessible. Yeah. Multi-tracking.
Love it.
Software.
I love GarageBand.
Oh, all right.
One day we'll graduate.
Good to know.
Tools.
I guess we're winding down here.
Yo, Lars, when's your next record coming out?
Tell us about
your next record.
Upcoming project.
Yeah, what's the new stuff? Hit me with that new shit, yo.
Well, thank you for asking. My new album, The Zombie Dinosaur LP, comes out November 6th. I've got
Put it on your calendars.
I've got a track with Cool Keith. We did a Roger Rabbit song.
Did a song with Cool Keith about Roger Rabbit? I hate so
of course he did.
Jealous
of course he
he's
did.
He's Judge Doom with three O's. Get
I
it?
Hate you so much.
Boom.
Because of a reference to his Dr. Doom record?
Yeah.
You got Cool Keith to do a Roger Rabbit. I'm so jealous.
I'm Roger and he's Judge Doom and we're battling versus.
Oh my God.
He kills it. Literally.
Yo, Raheem just got him on a record too.
Are you serious?
Yeah. He ripped him off from you. He saw that you got Cool Keith and then he went and got him.
Well, Keith is hustling. Keith is fun to work with. He did a good job. And the whole thing was like, I was like, yo, I want to do a Roger Rabbit song. He's like, all right, you got to send me the movie. And I'm like, all right, do you want a Blu-ray? He goes, nah, DVD's fine. So I sent Cool Keith the DVD and he watched it and did a really well-researched verse as Judge Doom. So that's on there.
Where can they find this? Is it on your Bandcamp, on the iTunes? Like, where can they get it?
It will be everywhere, son. Even in stores. And it's coming out on vinyl, too.
Oh,
and cassette.
Really?
And cassette.
Where? Who's picking it up?
Paper and Plastic, which is Vinny from Less Than Jake's label. They're putting out the vinyl.
Wow.
And then a label called Personal Bias and Blacktop Records are doing the cassette. And then Horse Records.
Cassette?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so that'll be out. And then Crappy Records, who did Robot Kills, they're doing the CD with me, with my label.
What about a flash drive? You're doing a flash drive?
Yeah, I'll be on I have these USB robots that will be on that.
Oh, cool. All
so
right.
It's basically going to be everywhere.
You're still talking about guests, though. You told me that Keith thing.
Cool Keith. Spose is on there.
Oh, nice.
Shout out to Spose. Love
what
him.
What up, Spose?
What up? His new record is good, by the way. It's called Why Am I So Happy? And it's fantastic.
I respect that title.
It's tight, right?
Yeah.
It's actually the story of your life, Mark.
As we all laugh heartily.
I've got Brian from I Fight Dragons on there.
Oh, nice.
I've got Suburban Legends and Vinny, and Roger from Less Than Jake, and I did a song with Watsky. So there's a lot of...
Oh, and I believe, can you talk about this? Uncle Meg from Handjob Academy is making a music video for that track?
Oh, shoot, yeah, she's directing...
You said it on stage.
She's directing video. It's called Never Afraid, and we're shooting it in a few weeks. And then my song Triforce, the video is coming out soon, and... we're going to announce the fall tour date. So a lot of joyful smiles.
Wow. Awesome. So
that is a full record with a full roster.
Coming out in November. Holy I know. Shit. We'll push it again when the album comes
out.
Thanks,
yeah.
Thanks, guys. I'm going to cry.
We'll do a review of it.
That'd be tight. That'd be tight.
We'll get a little...
We're completely biased, by the way. Like, yeah.
I can't review it.
Well, I mean, none of us can.
Oh, right.
But we'll try it. And we'll give it a glowing review.
Why can't we review it?
Because we're all friends forever now.
We don't have any objective distance between... Why you give me the stink eye here?
Listen, I can put on my professional hat.
You're the most professional of all of us. You're the closest to a journalist of all of us.
You guys can be honest. I mean, art is like fun to create. And I think as an artist, sharing it with your friends is the biggest joy. Like, there's this lyric from this guy, the Grouch from Living Legends. He goes, chances are this stuff won't ever catch on, but my friends like my songs, and I like my songs, and I've always had that philosophy. And I think you got to have that approach, because guess what? People who love you today might not necessarily love you tomorrow. Love yourself. And that's how you achieve peace and happiness.
And on that note, I think that's a good way to go out.
Yeah, I'd like to take a moment and just, Lars, I think we mentioned this during the break. This is the Epic Podcast 3-year anniversary. We've been making stupid sounds with our mouths for 3 years.
True.
To celebrate, I brought some macaroons from a local bakery.
I'm seriously crying right now.
Please don't cry, Lars.
Yes.
Are we all going to have a celebratory macaroon?
Yes, please. There's
that
there's
is the sweetest.
Chocolate and vanilla.
These are epic pies.
Please take a little macaroon.
Thank you so much.
No, please. Thank you, guys.
Should we cheers them? Cheers these macaroons.
Let us cheer these macaroons.
Cheers.
To art and
Rachel.
Friendship and many years of the same.
Well, these are delicious. Thank you.
These are delicious. Mm. Thank you.
Mm, they're so melty.
MC Lars, we would like to thank you so much for being our guest on the podcast this month.
I love you guys.
You are an angel made of angels.
Y'all don't say it. Rachel, I just want to say it's really tight that you, this whole conversation, you brought it in. You were the anchor. You brought the important questions. You kept everyone on track. You were the Han Solo to our Millennium Falcon.
What?
We got Chewie here, and we got Luke Skywalker.
Crying.
Oh, the new Star Wars is coming out.
New Star Wars.
Oh, wait, let's save that for later. I have a song about Star Wars on the new record. It's called If I Were a Jedi, That Would Be Hella Awesome. Peace. Because no nerdcore rapper ever did a Star Wars song. And scene.
Done. We're done.
MC Lars, thank you for being here.
We're done.
Once again, we would like to thank our guest, MC Lars, for being with us on the program this month.
We would like to thank him infinitely from the bottom, the top, the middle, both sides of our hearts.
I feel I'm both exhausted and rejuvenated at the exact same time.
He left and I feel happy. Not because, not happy because he left.
No.
I feel like I still am on a residual happiness high from him being here.
There's like a beautiful cloud of like
there's like an aura of joy
and wonderment that we're living in now. There's like the pre-gloom of our lives and then like the post-glow of an MC Lars encounter.
Yeah. Wow. Love you, MC Lars. Thank you so much.
So much. Shout out to MC Lars. He's tight.
Give it up for MC Lars, you guys.
Yeah.
If you really like that, then please, and if you want to have him back, shoot us an email at epicpodcast@gmail.com.
Drink.
All right, so let's get the hell out of here. Let's do some plugs and close up.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
What do you guys got?
Who wants to go first?
You go first. Yeah.
Well, starting today.
What?
Thursday, August 27th. I am on a short tour with Cool Z in the Midwest. Tonight, on August 27th, we're in Chicago, Illinois at Reggie's Live. On Friday, August 28th, we're at the Lyft in Dubuque, Iowa. And on Saturday, August 29th, we're at the Frequency in Madison, Wisconsin. And on Sunday, August 30th, we are at Gabe's in Iowa City. On Saturday, September 5th, we will also be appearing at Metacon, which is an annual convention in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Wowzers.
So come see Cool Z and me.
You got a full schedule
there. We will do some rapping at you, and you can buy my really stupid, childish new t-shirts.
I saw it. It's actually incredible.
I'm embarrassed. I'm mortified.
No, I love it.
It's cool. I hate myself.
I love it.
Beyond that, on Tuesday, September 22nd, I will be hosting Rabbit Hole Productions' birthday burlesque show for Bunny Buxom.
Yay!
It's a lot of bees.
That's a lot of bees.
And I will be hosting that show at the Parkside Lounge in New York City. That's what I got, you guys.
Lugatron.
Let's see. By the time this airs, the newest episode of Crash Chords will be out, where I will be a guest of. They're having me back, and we're going to review an album. You'll just have to go to Crash Chords to listen to that episode. CrashChords.com. The link will be in the doobly doo. On September 3rd, I am going to be at a Coney Island benefit fundraiser. It's a show to raise money for a scholarship program to send at-risk teens to sideshow school so that they can learn all of the wonderful, wonderful things that sideshow performers do. Then on September 22nd, I will be performing in Bunny Buxom's Birthday Bonanza show with bees. And Bunny Buxom invited me to do the show. Her only rule, her only stipulation, was that I had to remove my clothing.
Oh, I see.
So that's going to be incredible or groan-inducing for everyone involved.
You just sold some tickets.
but more than that, I do have a YouTube channel, and I'm trying to get more subscriptions and get more views. So please, if you like my stories or you like and you want to hear some stories and you want to see some magic, then please go to Nelson Lugo on YouTube, find my channel, click subscribe, and watch some videos and make some comments.
Oh, it'll be in the doobly-doo.
Oh, it's already in the doobly-doo.
Terrific.
Excellent. Rachel?
Today, this episode airs, and tonight I will be at the Sidewalk Cafe at 8 p.m. for a show called Bear. Bear, True Stories of Sex, Desire, and Romance. I'll be double featuring because Afterbirth Monkey is playing a quick set of some of our music, and I will be telling a story on stage. I will be popping my storytelling cherry as a booked storyteller.
Oh.
So you should come hear what I have to say. Really? Yeah, it's going to be weird, and I'm sure it'll be awkward because I'm going to talk about sex.
That show is weird and awkward, in general.
Yes, it's true.
Yeah.
Then on Saturday, the 29th, if you are in the New York City area, more specifically the Astoria area, come to the New World Queens Fest. It's the music festival taking place in Astoria Park. Afterbirth Monkey is hosting the musicians on the main stage. And we're going to do our cleanest set in the history of ever.
So, because last year you got basically lambasted.
Come see that precedented event. Where it's just us going, we don't sing anything about boobs.
Oh, dear.
That's true. Then on September 4th, Afterbirth Monkey will be a part of the Emancipation of Kitty Knights at Coney Island, USA.
What?
At 10 p.m., Femme Appeal is bringing, for one night only, Kitty Knights to the Coney Island Sideshow stage. Afterbirth Monkey's going to sing a new song, so come check us out.
Oh.
That's going to be great.
Nice.
On September 11th, Honey Badger Burlesque presents Honey Badgers Don't Give a Fuck at the Creek in the Cave at 10 p.m. Come check us out. It's going to be awkward. It's going to be cringeworthy. It's going to be all the things you probably didn't want to see, but you should come see. Then on September 12th, Charles Stunning will be at Washington, D.C.'s Beer Baron for Wibbly Wobbly Pasty Wasty Stuff, a tribute to Doctor Who. And that is it for me. That's what I'm doing.
Good gravy. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's always.
I'm going to be busy. And you know I'm going to book more stuff, so follow me on all my social media at I Am Rachel Shank or Facebook.com.
Follow us all on the social
Rachel
media.
Rachel Q. Shank.
Or else.
Or else.
I think that's it.
I
think we
all
did
right,
it.
Let's get the fuck out of here.
Why not?
This has been the Epic Podcast, episode 35. I have been your host, Nelson Lugo.
I have been your other host, Schaefer the Dark Lord.
And I have been your other host, Rachel Shank.
Be safe, internets.
Did you know it rains diamonds on gaseous planets like Neptune and Uranus? They contain methane at high pressures and temperatures. Turn the diamonds, which then fall to the center of the planet.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Epic Podcast.
We'd love to hear from you, our loyal listener. So send us your feedback, love mail, hate mail, dick pics, and recipes to epicpodcast@gmail.com. But seriously, don't send us dick pics.
As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network. And there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes or like and follow us on SoundCloud. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and more, visit nerdyshow.com. And be sure to follow Nerdy Show and the Epic Podcast on all of your favorite social networks. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.
Hey, Schaefer, I have a question for you.
Oh, yes, please.
Are you feeling joyful?
Do you feel joyful?
Do you feel joyful?
Are you asking me legitimately, or are you doing an MC Lars impression?
That's tight. High five.
Definitely doing.
True player, true artist.
Oh, goodness gracious.
That's tight.
Let's high five
it out. We're the best.
That was hip-hop.
So hip-hop.